I'm Alex Auerbach, and I'm a performance psychologist with experience working in the NBA, NFL, with elite military units, and Fortune 5 executives. I'm excited to bring you the Perform podcast, where we unlock and uncover the principles and practices of health and high performance for teams, individuals, and organizations so that you can be your best when it matters most. Delighted to be joined today by Mark Minella. Mark, how are you?
I'm great, Alex. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you because you've got a tremendously unique background. You've done some really cool stuff, and now you're taking your world of education and instructional design to sport. So don't let me butcher it. Tell us about you and your background here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, had a 20-year career in education. Started as a teacher, then moved into a role where I led a charter school, actually founded a charter school here in Philly, where I'm based out of. Led that school as principal for 5 years. Then, you know, we were having some success. We were getting this big waiting list of kids and families who wanted to join us. And so I moved into like a superintendent role and oversaw the expansion of our one school into five schools. You know, instead of just serving middle school, we went K-12. And so was sort of sitting over the top of this little school system here in Philadelphia for another 10 years after that. So for those, you know, for a long time, I was just focused on the school world. Now, the schools that I led were called KIPP schools. KIPP stands for Knowledge is Power Program. And basically, we operate in areas that we would consider to be, or we used to refer to as educationally underserved. So here in Philadelphia, that's like North Philadelphia, West Philadelphia, places where if you're a child or a family living in that neighborhood, you don't have a lot of great options in terms of schools to go that are safe and also challenging and also where children are supported to be able to reach great heights in their education. So we set out to create college preparatory schools for any kid. So not a test-in situation. It was just a lottery. But we were able to build these schools in such a way that our students were going to and through college at a rate that was about 4x, you know, about 400% greater rate than the kids who were going to the schools, the other schools in the neighborhood. So we felt really good about what we were doing in those KIPP days. And yeah, it was a really rewarding piece of my career.
I appreciate the background. I think you're kind of underselling what you achieved with KIPP a little bit. I mean, KIPP has been written about fairly extensively. You guys had some pretty remarkable outcomes for places that, if I'm not mistaken, you know, kind of the rest of the area surrounding you was notably more challenged. And you guys way outperformed. I'm curious if you could let us into maybe some of why you think that is.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think that ties right into sort of this next phase of my career, right? Because one of the things that we were facing and we had to deal with was like, okay, so if we're working with students and we started as a middle school, so we're taking on fifth graders, we have this high bar for them. We want them to go to and through college, but they're coming to us 10 years old and they're not reading or doing math on grade level. Some of them aren't reading at all as 10-year-olds, not because there's anything wrong with their brains. This isn't like a neurodivergency sort of issue. This is simply kids were undertaught. And so what are we going to do to sort of change that reality? So if you think about, if you can work, bear with me here and think about like a coordinate geometry deal, right? It's like on the x-axis, I've got time, and on the y-axis, I've got attainment or learning, like how much kids learn. When I went to school, you know, maybe it's about a 45 degree angle. Like we get, you know, I go through school, I'm learning. And then by the end of that time, here we are, I'm ready for college, right? I went to just a traditional public school outside Albany, New York, my entire career, right? Just a average suburban school district. But our kids are starting at a place where they're so far behind that if they just get typical growth, they're not going to be college ready by the time they finish 12th grade. So we have to change the slope of that line. We need a steeper line. We need to basically have our kids learn more faster. So how do you have kids learn more faster? Well, there's a couple things you can do. The first thing you do is you can put more time, more seat time, more time on task in front of great teachers. Okay. And, you know, while I think I kind of gave it away when I said great teachers, right? It's like more time by itself isn't going to do it. If we said our kids just go to some lousy school for longer, they're not necessarily going to get that sort of bump in attainment that we would need in order to have them be college ready. But so more time's part of it, but it's not all. And at KIPP, we had a longer day. We would go to school from 7:30 until 4:30 every day. We went every other Saturday. We went for a month in the summer. We needed more time in order to catch our kids up and push them past where their peers were able to do. But it's not just that, right? So we needed to do two other things in addition to more time. We needed to create really safe places, psychologically safe places, which I know is a topic you just got into with Dave Collins last time. But this notion of like a place where children can focus on their learning and they're not worried about some of the mess around them, place with a strong organizational culture, a strong school culture. We need to be teaching our kids with the best, most relevant, scientifically informed teaching practices that we can, right? And so if we put kids in a place where all their peers are focused on getting to college, we put kids in a place where they're safe. They know that they don't have to worry about some of the distractions outside of school. They don't have to worry about the distractions inside school. We have to set up a culture where it's cool to raise your hand. It's cool to ask a question. It's cool to be smart. Like, we were really sort of like pushing the envelope on culture here in terms of like what we were telling our kids. We were defining cool for them. And then we were putting the best teachers in front of them we could, equipped with some of the best teacher practices that we could. So the ways that kids can access new information and transfer that new information from working memory to long-term memory. That's sort of what we did. That's what we built. And along the way, at some point, we caught the eye of the Philadelphia Eagles. As you mentioned, Kip was written about a lot. And so when Chip Kelly came in, this is like 2013 now, Chip Kelly came into the Philadelphia Eagles after a really successful run at Oregon. And he is trying to basically shift the culture of the Philadelphia Eagles. And he's, you know, he and his staff, they're reading books, and they come across a passage in the book, The Talent Code by Dan Coyle. And in that, there's a whole chapter on Kip. And so they're like, ooh, that's interesting. They call us up, you know, sort of long story short, we have a bunch of interesting conversations about culture. They come out to our high school. We go to their training complex. We're having, you know, sort of mixing it up, having a good time. But about 5 months later, after all that, they called. And they said, hey, we got a question for you. Like, what's up? Said, when we went to your high school, we saw, you know, 15, 16-year-olds just like locked in to that lesson. Like, they were hanging on the teacher's every word. They were leaning forward. They were taking notes. They were raising their hand. They were having like these dynamic conversations about content. Like, when we go back to our training facility, and you know, football, there's a lot of like classroom time, right? Like, you have to install the offense and the defense every week. And so, like, when we go back to our training facility and we go into our classrooms, that's not what we see. Guys are slouched back. There's not a pen or a pencil in sight. Some of them have their headphones on. They're like, what are you doing? You'd think that like your 15 and 16 year old kids might be the ones slouched back, might be the ones who are like, ah, high school sucks, right? And our athletes, with every motivation to learn this week's install, would be leaning forward and dig, but that's not what's happening. So why do you think that is? And you know, and I said, look, I don't know, but my guess would be it's the teaching, right? And it ain't the students, it's the teaching. And they're like, could you teach our coaches how to do what your teachers do to grab on to their students and have them, you know, basically just like have our classrooms look like yours? And I was like, I have no idea, but hey, that sounds like fun. Let's give that a try. And that sort of segued me into this little second act in my career.
So what did you teach them?
Well, so first thing first, you know, I'm just a teacher, right? Like, I played high school sports, but I can speak the language a little bit, but like, I am not a professional coach. I was never a professional athlete. I was not even a college athlete. And so what could I teach them? Well, I think that I have, and others like what doing what I do also have, like a very specific set of things that I can help a coach with, right? Like, I have no opinions about your game plan. I have no opinions about the proper way to teach hitting or to teach free throw shooting or any of that stuff. But what I do have some opinions about and some knowledge around, is how to, what we said earlier, this notion of like, how do you get something from working memory into long-term memory? like, which is really at some level, like how I would define learning. And so this idea of what did we do? This question, what did we do? Well, we did a couple things. First of all, we did like one large session to the entire group, orienting them to the entire assistant coach group at the Eagles, orienting them to this idea that like, there's such a thing as excellent teaching. It is not probably what you experienced in college. If you went to college and you had like a big lecture hall and you had a professor in the front and that professor was like basically reading his notes out loud to you for an hour, like that's not great teaching. Like great teaching is not just somebody really explaining something really well. Great teaching goes beyond that. So I think we sort of norm people on that idea. And then we said, if you're interested in developing like a coaching relationship with a KIPP leader, and it was like me and two other guys who did this, then, you know, raise your hand and like, we will set up like a coaching cadence with you where we're going to videotape your lessons with the guys. Then we're going to watch that videotape because, you know, you're teaching them when we have a full-time day job. We weren't going to like say, sorry, kids, we got to go play with the Eagles now. We're right. So this was like set up. So like you can record your lesson and then send us the recording. And then we're going to look through it and we'll give you feedback on it. And we'll give you some strategies to try based on what you want to try and get better at based on what we're seeing happening with your students in front of you. And so about half the coaches raised their hand and said, that sounds cool. The other half of the coaches said, I'll pass. Great. So what we actually ended up doing by accident was building a control group and an experimental group. And so now we can actually test whether the intervention is effective. And so we went in and we developed this coaching cadence. We taught them some kind of basic teacher stuff that you might get early on in an education program. Actually, a bunch of it came from Doug Lamov's Teach Like a Champion. Doug, who's also, of course, written the Coach's Guide to Teaching. And who I've collaborated with in the past. But, you know, before Doug and I started collaborating, like he has this book that is kind of a foundational text in many schools across the country, just around some basic things like this is how you effectively do a cold call. People have heard of cold calls, like they've seen it in the movie, the movies or whatever, right? But like there's a way to do a cold call such that you get a better outcome. And so we taught them the technical way to do the cold call. And by the way, you ask the question first, and then you do a pause. By doing that, everyone in the room takes the mental rep and tries to answer that question. And then you say, okay, Alex, what do you got? If you say, Alex, what's the Pythagorean theorem or whatever, right? It's like no one else in the room is thinking because now they're just like, oh, thank God, that's Alex's problem, not mine, right? So you ask the question first, then you pause and you let everybody do the thinking. And then you call on the person's name, right? So like little things like that, like try this, not that, where we were able to basically increase the efficacy of these teachers. Now, how do we know we increase the efficacy of the teachers? Well, we can actually measure it, right? Because in the NFL, or at least at the Eagles back in 2013, 2014, they were grading every single play, not just on whether or not the athlete won the rep, but also on did they go the right direction? Like, did they do the right thing? Did they know their assignment? And so we were able to isolate the, did they know their assignment aspect of their grades of every play in practice and every play in the game. And we were able to show that the coaches of the position groups, those athletes who were working in our intervention had fewer mental mistakes, both in practice and the game day, than the coaches who weren't working with the intervention. So we sort of proved that this worked. And then of course, this is pro sports. So Chip Kelly gets fired and it all goes away, right? So like the Eagles never called us back after that. You know, the Chip went off to UCLA, or first the Niners and then UCLA. And so it sort of fizzled from there, even though we were able to prove that this is an effective intervention. But the people who were involved with it remembered it, right? And so years later, they landed at the Cleveland Guardians, right as I was leaving KIPP in 2018. And they called and said like, hey, would you want to try and do something like that again? And I said, oh yeah, I'm your guy. Let's go. And so from there, I was able to start to build up a little bit of a practice. And so now I'm an independent consultant. And in addition to working with schools and doing some leadership coaching, I also have this pro and high level sport client base where I'm doing some of that work we did with the Eagles now in sport more broadly.
Amazing. And I'm glad that people are seeing the link between what you've achieved with KIPP and the application here in sport. I want to dive a little bit deeper. You know, give us kind of your framework. Like if you were going to spend the next 20 minutes teaching us and teaching the audience about how to become a better coach? Start with what's the framework we'd start with?
Let's go. All right. I love it. Okay. So the general idea is, you know, trying to take this concept of teaching, which people get master's degrees and they get PhDs in, right? Like, and trying to boil it down into something that's like attainable and accessible for an average coach or somebody who really, frankly, anybody who wants to teach anything was the challenge that I was trying to tackle. And so what we did was sort of, I came up with this acronym, IDEA, IDEA, and said, okay, great teaching has four elements to it. There's an I, a D, an E, and an A. And so if you can remember IDEA, you can remember the four elements. And if I can teach you what those four elements are, then you're going to be able to look at your own teaching whenever you're teaching anything. If you're helping your, you know, 9-year-old with his homework, or if your colleague is like, hey, I don't know how to use, you know, Microsoft Excel. Can you help me out here? Like, you can actually teach whatever it is that you want to teach using the acronym IDEA and the four principles of great teaching. So the first, great teaching has to inform. That's your I, right? And this notion of inform, let's go back to that college lecture, right? So like, again, you're sitting in that lecture hall, you got 300 people around you, and you've got an expert sitting in front of you, and he or she is, you know, explaining really well what's happening, that their content, you know, the causes of the Revolutionary War, or, you know, the functions of the mitochondria, or whatever the heck it is that you're talking about, they're explaining it really well. That has to happen. That is the first thing that has to happen. There has to be some new content that is introduced in ideally a memorable way. Okay. Now that new content can look any one of a number of ways. You can have people do a pre-reading. You could watch video with somebody. You can explain it verbally. You know, there's other things that you can do to introduce this new material, but it's not teaching if it's not, there's not some new material you're trying to learn, right? Now, again, there are aspects of coaching that have nothing to do with teaching. There's a lot of aspects of coaching that have nothing to do with teaching. There's aspects of coaching that are like ego management. There's aspects of coaching that are culture building. There's aspects of coaching that are having a guy reflect on his own performance. This all matters. It's all critically important. But the part that I'm talking about, there has to be some new information you're bringing into the table. Okay. So that's inform. How you do that, that's, you know, there's lots of different ways that excellent teaching can look. The D stands for develops. Excellent teaching develops over time, right? What we call these hit it and quit it sessions, you know, the one-offs, the like, hey, I'm going to go and I'm going to watch a guy and he's going to explain this to me for 5 minutes and then I'm going to leave and now I'm better. Maybe, but great teaching really has to happen over time. First and foremost, you have to know when you're introducing that new material in the inform step, you have to know what your audience, what your students already know. That notion of prior knowledge that they bring into the lesson, you have to be really pretty clear on what that prior knowledge is, because new information can't be transferred into memory unless it latches onto something that you already know. You know, I could rattle off the functions of the mitochondria. I'm a former high school biology teacher, right? So like, I could rattle off the functions of the mitochondria to you, but you're not going to remember them if you don't have any clue what a mitochondria even is. Right? Maybe you could parrot it back to me if you take really good notes and you study the words. But to get to understanding, you'd have to understand what a cell is. You'd have to understand that different cells have these things inside them called organelles, and that organelles have different functions. And now you're ready to maybe talk about what the function of the mitochondria is, right? There has to be some prior knowledge that this exists in. And so, you know, a great teacher could teach calculus to any 11th grader out there. But if that 11th grader isn't ready for calculus, it doesn't matter how good the teacher is, right? Now, an excellent teacher will bring their instruction down to the level of that teacher. And that this is where teaching gets really hard when you have 30 kids in front of you and they're all at a different level. But the point here remains that great teaching has to develop. It has to start with prior knowledge and then you build on it over time, right? And this notion of building on it over time, if we're teaching something complicated, there's probably going to be a couple different steps. An expert should know the correct order to teach this new complicated content. And so that building over time is called scaffolding, right? And so we scaffold our content in a specific order to reach a higher level of understanding. That's the D. E, excellent teaching engages. It's got to be engaging. If it's a passive activity, think back to the way that the Eagles described their their different position player rooms, right? Like if everybody's just sitting back, if nobody has a pen in their hand and they're just letting the information wash over them, then we have a pretty low likelihood that we're going to be able to convert that information from working memory into long-term memory. This is why people talk about taking notes. Think about what's actually happening when you're taking notes. When you're taking notes, you're listening to what I'm saying. Your brain is then processing it and figuring out what is going to transfer into the pen that's going to transfer onto the page to try and capture the idea. Well, you're thinking about it. You're engaging with that material when you are processing what is being said, putting it into your own words and plopping it down on the paper. That's why verbatim notes actually and like transcription is actually not what they recommend for college students to do or any student who's going to be taking notes on content, because you're losing something if you're just trying to listen and jot it down and not think about what it means and put it into your own words. Now, taking notes is just one way engagement can look. We also talk about asking questions. Asking questions is a great way to get somebody to engage because now they have to think and come up with the answer. Typically, we want to ask nice open-ended questions, right? And typically, we want to ask the question in a manner in which we're not tipping our hand. What were you thinking? Did you possibly think that you should have gone left right there? I kind of know what the answer is. No, I should not have gone left. I should have gone right. Right? As opposed to like, tell me about this play here. Tell me about the choices that you made. Right? Like non-judgmental, open-ended, you almost always going to be better. But again, questioning is just one of the engagement strategies. There's lots of different things we can do, but the bottom line is we want to, you know, Daniel Willingham says memory is the residue of thought. If we want people to remember something, we have to make them think about it. We have to make them grapple with it in some way, do something with that information in order to hope that, in order to increase our chances that it goes into long-term memory. And then the last piece, the A, is assess and adjust. Okay, so now I'm teaching this content, right? And so there are some implicit things that I'm doing as I'm teaching to try and check and see whether or not there's learning going on, right? So I'm looking at you right now. We're doing this on Zoom. I can see your face. I see nodding. I see your eyes look like there's understanding. There's like a smile. So like that tells me you're with me, right? So that's an implicit assessment. Do I know for sure that you could rattle off the idea method after I'm done here? I don't know that for sure, but I at least know you're with me. That's an implicit assessment. It's not great, but it's better than nothing. An explicit assessment would be if I were to say, okay, Alex, now that we've done this, like, tell me, what is the idea model, right? I'm not gonna put you on the spot here on your podcast. That wouldn't be very nice. I won't get invited back. But the idea here—
Thank you for sparing me.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Well, of course. And again, this idea that like, I'm not really teaching it, I'm sort of explaining it quickly. But the idea here that you want to be able to assess and then you want to adjust, right? And so now if I say, hey, Alex, what's the idea method? And you're like, well, it's inform, develop, and there's an E, I can't remember what it is. Okay, now that I've assessed it, now I need to go back and adjust. Okay, shoot, Alex doesn't remember what E stands for. I need to come up with a new way to teach E, another way to teach that E for engagement, right? Because now I've learned that my student didn't get it. And so now it's up to me as the teacher to adjust my plans and to try again. And I will say, as we sort of wrap this concept of idea, this is a place where I think, from what I've seen across, you know, I work with the United States Olympics Committee, so I get to see across a bunch of different sports, but I've also had contracts in football, baseball, and basketball at the pro level. What I see across sports more than anything else is when you look, break down IDEA and you say, okay, so where are we best and where are we struggling the most? This notion of assess and adjust, I think, is the place where, in general, the professional coaches that I've seen have the biggest sort of delta between current performance and optimal performance. This notion of like, do we really know what our athletes are able to do? Do we really know what our athletes understand, what our athletes are seeing? And if we do know, and we identify that they actually can't do this thing that we want them to be able to do, can we adjust our teaching, right? And so I see lots of times, like there's an install happening. So like, you know, we're going to do a new, inbounds play in basketball under the basket. And like, okay, we're going to call it horns and we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And like, okay, got it. So we're going to run horns. Okay, I see it. And then I'm watching guys run it. And like, this guy keeps doing this thing. It's not exactly right. But shoot, look at the time. I've got this nice printed agenda. The coach printed out for me that said at 10:21, we're going to transition to the next thing. And like, boy, I can tell that our shooting guard does not know where he's supposed to go on this play. He's gone the wrong way two different times, but we got to move on because, you know, the schedule says 10:21. We got to work on, you know, on defense now. And so I think that there's an opportunity here for many coaches to actually reflect on their practice and say, okay, am I making sure that this stuff that I just introduced, if I just taught a new inbounds play, if I just taught a new, you know, defense, if I just taught a new whatever, do I know that my guys can do it? If they can't do it, what's my plan to make sure that we're not going to go out there in front of 20,000 people tomorrow night and run horns the wrong way, right? So I think that there's, you know, as we look at the idea model, I think there are places where you can see how it clearly connects to coaching, but also some places where I think there's opportunity for folks to sharpen up their practice.
100%. I mean, as I'm listening to you talk about the assess and adjust method, what comes to mind for me, and one of the things I've often seen with coaches that I, you know, can on some level understand as a former coach, and on some level I'm still baffled by, is like the coaching reaction when a player doesn't get it, to sort of like berate the guy, you know, call them stupid, right? Do all these things that would, one, don't enhance learning or psychological safety, but two, is really a reflection of you. And that might be a scary thing to address, right? But this is not like, very likely, this is not a reflection of some deep flaw within the person that you're coaching. This is probably a reflection of some mismatch between what you're teaching, what the expectations are that you have of this player, what they actually know. And so I can resonate with this gap you're identifying. And that leads me to, like, as you were talking about, I started to think, like, what, from your perspective, what are the most common mistakes people make when trying to apply this model? Maybe that's one of them, but what are the other ones that come to mind?
Well, just I want to just build on that thought, and then I can run off a couple others probably, right? But this idea that I think that there's a hesitation sometimes to assess because we feel like or a coach or a teacher feels like, I did my job. My job was to present this information in a way that is like the best way that I could think to do it. Teaching as input, right? We used to tell a teacher, the kid, like, you have to earn the right to say you taught that thing. And so if I take, you know, I've got an 8-year-old son, and if I tell you that I'd spent all summer last summer teaching him how to swim, and then you're like, okay, cool. And then so you pick my kid up and you throw him into the deep end of a pool, right? Then if I taught him how to swim, he can get back to the side, no problem, right? If I taught him how to swim, but he actually can't swim and he sinks to the bottom, we have a problem. Did I teach him how to swim? No, I didn't teach him how to swim if he sinks the bottom of the pool. I talked about swimming. I showed him stuff. He can do certain pieces of swimming. Perhaps he can kick and he can do the breaths, but he can't actually swim unless he can swim. So I didn't teach him how to swim unless he can swim. And I think that sometimes there's something where, again, to your notion about, like, it was almost like an invulnerability thing happening here, where like if I actually ask them that question and find out they can't do it, then people are going to think I'm not doing my job as a coach. And I think there's a paradigm shift here, which is like this notion that, like, yeah, there's no shame in the fact that a guy doesn't get it at first, right? Like, I don't know about you, but like everybody usually hits a point in math where all of a sudden math gets hard, right? Like, oh man, addition, awesome. Yeah, like subtraction, let's go, I got this. And then for some kids, it comes as early as like multiplication. It's like, what? For me, it was right around pre-calc. I was like, huh? Like pre-calculus kicked my butt a little bit, right? And so this idea that, like, all of a sudden I go from a kid who thinks he can do math to a kid who thinks he can't do math. And so now we can get into all kinds of like fixed versus growth mindset stuff. But the reality is the teacher has to expect that there are some number of kids or students in their class who aren't going to get it the first time. And like, so assess and adjust simply says, hey, expect that, check for it. And like, it's not over. Like, we're not done here. You haven't failed. You've only failed if you now give up. Like, you haven't failed if you have to teach it a second time, a third time, a fourth time, because that's what teaching is, right? I think so. That's one place where I see coaches. Sometimes there's a gap between like what we could be and what we are today. I think another place is right around is around engage. And you know, there's lots of times that coaches think telling and explaining is all I have to do. Right. And so this notion of stopping at I, at inform. And so you see it a lot in timeouts in NBA and in soccer, where like, okay, I've got my clipboard. Okay, do this, do it, do it, burp, 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 go. I fixed it. Right. I fixed it. Maybe. But are we sure that like everybody knows where to go? And I was just at I went to the Sixers game on Monday, and there was one inbound play towards the end of the game. And I'm watching it, and it's like, nah, they did not know where they were supposed to go. Like, they just butchered the inbound play, right? And they lost the position. Sixers end up going on to lose the game. And it's like, I don't know, that's more, I know enough about this to know that it doesn't all come down to one inbounds play. And also, just from my seat, it sure looked like they did not know where they were trying to go. Or not, at least not all five guys thought that that the same thing, weren't on the same page about what this inbounds play was going to look like. And so I think that sometimes coaches can still fall in love with their own voice and just think that if I've explained it well, that's enough, as opposed to doing some of the other things around having guys engage and then assessing. And can you do that in an NBA timeout? 30 seconds, cheerleaders, fans, you know, drum line in the Sixers game. I don't know, it's hard, but, you know, these are supposed to be the best coaches in the world. So my thinking is, yeah, if they put their minds to it, they probably could.
I'd like to agree with that. I think, you know, there's a reason that you're on the sideline, right? So that you probably should have the skills, or do have the skills to do it. I think I also see, you know, some of the challenge with engage, and I think now I'm at, okay, so we've got these common challenges. Like, you have the chance to get everyone who's listening to this to do three things differently starting tomorrow and how they teach. What are the three things you want people to start doing that would enhance their ability to deliver?
Right. Great question. I got to think about this one for a second. So I think, you know, one thing that we know at KIPP, and I would say the vast majority of the coaches that I've had the good fortune to work with know that this is true, but it's probably not 100%. And I would want to get this first step, use this first step to do something that 80% or 90% of coaches do, but let's get it to 100. So the first thing is trust-based relationships that are grounded in this notion of, like, I can be selectively vulnerable with you. You can be vulnerable with me. It's okay that you don't know everything. It's okay that you can't make every shot. It's okay that you can't make every pass. Like, but let's build that open relationship so that as this foundational step, but for everything else. And so, like, this, you know, we can put ego aside. We can put aside, you know, the fronting that we're doing and, like, pretending like we're perfect, and we can see each other as human beings who are imperfect. Like, I would say, like, that is the number one thing, that if every coach in America did that, from Little League all the way up through, you know, the NBA or MLB or wherever else, all athletes would be better for it. So, like, that's the first thing, like focus on building these trust-based relations. I think the second thing is this idea of, you know, really being asset-based. It's related to relationships, but this notion of, like, hey, yeah, you can't take two steps without dribbling the ball off your foot. That's great. So, like, I'm going to put you in a position to not dribble the ball. Or at a minimum, you know, I'm going to say, like, hey, you're playing because you have these gifts, you have these strengths. So I'm going to focus on these strengths and how do we get the most out of these strengths and not obsess with people and pound them over the head on the things that they're not as good at. I think you see that this obsession with deficits and this obsession with making everybody a 10 out of 10 on every single aspect of the rubric. I think that just gets us in trouble. And then I think the third thing really is going to be, for me, like, this notion of, like, excellent teaching, and say, like, hey, you know, as the coach, it is your job to make sure that everybody knows what it is they're supposed to do. Everybody is learning, is growing, developing. And so, like, we have to start with this growth mindset, but then what do we do with this growth mindset? Well, I'm going to keep this growth mindset about my player, and I'm going to be doing everything I can to make sure that they can do the thing that I've set out to teach them today. And so, yeah, I would say that the third thing is really just, like, take the teaching part of coaching seriously. Get as good at that as you're getting at the X's and O's. I think lots of times coach development, people think that it means, like, I'm going to learn how to install a new offense, or I'm going to learn this new scheme. And sometimes coach development needs to be on some of the soft stuff, quote unquote, or some of the things outside of scheme, around connecting, around teaching, around, you know, whatever other aspect of coaching matters. So, you know, go beyond scheme as you're thinking about developing yourself.
I cannot think of a better place to press pause for today. We're going to have to do a round two. Mark Minella, this was awesome. Before we sign off, where can people find you, follow you, learn more about your work?
Yeah, so I don't have a huge sort of presence out there online, right? So, like, certainly you can look me up on LinkedIn, you can reach me there. For now, I got a little bit of a my practice, a little bit of a boutique-y kind of practice, right? So a lot of word of mouth happening. So hopefully, your listeners can help that word of mouth spread, and reach out to me. My email is manelaconsulting@outlook.com, you can find me on LinkedIn, and ask Alex, he'll hook you up.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Really, really enjoyed it, and a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Perform Podcast, where we unlock and uncover the principles and practices of health and high performance for individuals, teams, and organizations. Until next time, thanks for joining.